Hey guys, welcome to episode 161 of the podcast. Guys, listen, I got to tell you, this is going to be short and sweet and possibly not even sweet because I just got back from a trip and my flight was delayed and I couldn't be running more behind on getting this podcast to over to Nerdist. So this is going to be very quick. I want you to please enjoy this episode with my dear, dear, dear friend and I was going to say co-conspirator, but so far we haven't had like any heists that we've completed, or much espionage, but, you know what? Screw it. My co-conspirator, Gabriel Diani, I call him Gabe. I still don't know what I'm going to call him in the intro. I probably better text him, find out if he wants to be Gabriel Diani or Gabe Diani. I'm going to get on that right now, guys. Now you know the internal workings of my process. And yes, I did say process. Guys, I hope you enjoy the episode. I'll talk to you soon.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
By reading the minutes of the last meeting, I just picked up a microphone. Once you pick up the microphone, this thing is
then you're
happening.
In. Do you do this? Do you hold the microphone?
Yeah. Oh, I guess I should have told you in advance. Yeah.
I didn't realize.
You're going to have to get used to it.
All right.
Don't try to pull some stand-up routine where suddenly you're holding a microphone, so you're like, what else is going on? What else? What else? What else?
The bit doesn't work because you can't see my notepad that's out
that
I'm looking
at. That's true. You can't see that you pull out a collapsible stool and a little and put your water on that and then bring out a crumpled piece of paper.
Right.
What did I just... Oh, yeah. I just did a show with for the Young Storytellers Foundation, which, guys, if I haven't talked about it before, it's a great program. And it's mentoring kids in schools. You don't need to do this because you already did so much actual teaching. And I know you hate children.
I'm absolved.
You are. I think if you have like a card, I can actually punch it. I have a special...
I do.
Yeah,
I get a free kid after I get 10.
You get a free kid. It's weird. It seems like it would be the opposite considering that I just absolved you of it. Right. But writers go in and mentor kids like once a week for 6 weeks. And then they have the big show at the end where... We don't know about this. I don't know if we ever talked to you about it. Mm-hmm. The kids have like towards the end of the school year, they'll have plays during the day, and so actors will come in and just read the scripts cold. They'll get cast and act the scripts for the whole school. And so they do this fundraiser that's at night. Anyway, the point of all this was that Hal Lublin did the improv. We did an improv set at that show in addition to performing some kids' plays, and somehow he got set up to be a stand-up. And like the first thing he did was pull out an imaginary crumpled sheet of paper and look down at it and like wipe his brow and go, okay, yeah, these aren't going to work. It was really good. Feels really good.
But you're performing kids' plays?
Yeah,
but the kids aren't allowed to perform? Or they perform with you?
Yeah, the kids don't perform. Well, it's just the writers. It's just a writer's workshop. So it's not
kids are writing their,
yeah, so they don't, it's not that cool. They don't. So it'll be like six kids, six plays.
And
the actors
we once did.
Oh yeah. 12-year-old boy playwright awards. I still think about that one. That's a really clever premise.
It is. Cole Stratton.
Yeah. I always talk about that one cause I'm like, that's a perfect example of like high meets low in terms of sort of a lofty high concept idea that allows for just the most ridiculous stuff, but you're cloaking it in the vein of like, we're making fun of what a 12-year-old boy would write. So if you're laughing at the fart noises, it's okay. We're all friends here.
Right.
Yeah.
You should have had the last one be Transformers though.
I guess you're right. The shortcut seems.
Yeah.
Dated,
but it hadn't been out yet. That's how old that sketch is.
It's true. Transformers.
There's no Transformers movie at that point.
Oh, no way.
Just the original cartoon that we tried to watch here.
Wow. And also, we tried to watch that a very long time ago as well.
Yeah.
Did we watch it because the Transformers live action movie came out?
No, I don't remember why.
That was unrelated.
We were all hanging out.
You wanted me to enjoy the music and that soundtrack?
And you and Etta were like, what is going on? and I think Chris was here, but. Yeah. I couldn't even remember. I couldn't figure out what was going on either. When you're a kid, like you're so steeped in that mythology of who all the characters are, and I had no idea what was happening, who anyone was. It was just lasers and robots dying, which was very traumatic at the time.
How far into it did we get? Did we watch the whole thing?
Well, no. I think we watched Optimus Prime die.
Okay.
Spoiler alert.
Okay.
No one has seen the movie. And then I think you guys were out. I think it was like,
let's watch some.
Let's watch some upstairs, downstairs.
I was going to say, what I expected you to say was, let's watch some British murder mystery show, because Edda and I both.
Which I'm into as well.
Cycle through. I know you were, but the last time we talked about, I don't remember what I asked you about. Was it The Fall? I said, have you watched The Fall?
And
you were like, ugh.
Yeah. I'm kind of tired of the real dark, broody.
I know.
They drink a lot and they are very tortured by this case. And
they have at least one estranged family member who may or may not die over the course of the season.
And the Fall was so like fetishistic in terms of like the guy was so creepy, the serial killer guy.
Yeah,
as opposed to the likable serial killer guys that I'm used to.
Right, right. The fun, silly
the
ones like Charles Manson.
Of the world.
Yeah. Having said that, did you watch Aquarius?
No, is that good?
I'll tell you what. I've heard zero about it. I saw this is the David Duchovny set in the 60s. I guess it's an NBC show. Like Hannibal, you're like, really?
Right.
All I saw was just the billboards of like a peace sign and him looking over some mirrored sunglasses, Huey Lewis style.
The classic
Google it, guys. Google
poster.
It.
Poster.
And but then in passing, someone I don't remember who it was, but it was like someone I think is a great writer was like, yeah, da da da, Aquarius. And so I was like, we'll see about that. And so I watched the pilot. Now, I will admit that I have an iTunes gift card. And I was like, you know what? I really hate... Part of what's so absurd about these like deep, dark shows is when it cuts to like an Applebee's commercial. So I was like, I think I'm going to download the pilot.
Right.
And I watched it. And I just thought it was so good.
Huh.
And so I've watched the series. It's
is
like 13 episodes.
Netflix? I feel like I've seen it.
I don't know. Maybe it is. Yeah. But it's really pretty good. I mean, it reminds me of like Zodiac, you know that movie?
I do.
Which was
know that
good.
Movie.
It's good. Yeah. It's not too dark.
Okay.
That movie
Zodiac was really disturbing.
I guess it is.
Those murder scenes were like really.
Yeah, and there's no. It's not like that. None of that has happened yet. Although it does involve Charlie Manson, which is why I thought of it. They call him Charlie in the show, so no, I feel like I know him. He's very dynamic. But I recommend it.
Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty good. You were an X-Files fan, right? Who were you?
A late bloomer to the X-Files, but yeah, I am now.
How late of a bloom?
I remember watching one episode when I was, when it was first running, and the opening credits were like, what? This is, like, they couldn't improve those opening credits over the...
What,
I've just
me
alienated
what,
so many people.
I know that there's like a thumbprint.
It just seemed like it was like some kids,
maybe
some
a
kids film project.
Swirl.
Yeah,
that's fair.
They couldn't have.
That's fair.
You know, but I'm a fan now, and we've been working our way through it on Netflix. Although they get a little, I don't know.
It gets weighed down by
knowing
by
that
by
there
the
is no answer
plot.
Coming, yeah. And there's like 9 seasons is a little rough. But individual episodes are really great.
Yeah. Well, that's when that show is. This is my X-Files podcast, by the way. I don't know if you thought you were doing the JV Club. This is much more specific. But it is one of those where like the standalone episodes that don't relate to this sort of big, huge mystery and conspiracy are so good.
Yeah.
And even the ones that hint at this conspiracy. You're like, oh, intriguing. And then as it sort of degenerates into more and more about that big thing that doesn't seem ever clear.
Yeah. And I wish they had. Tough. There's some episodes that I can't remember the name of it. It's a long title and has the name Jose in it. But like it was really kind of funny. And I feel like I wish there was more humor in it. It was so serious all the time.
Yeah, like Buffy. Buffy had a lot more kind of comedy mixed in with a supernatural.
Right.
But this is this will be an interesting one because I feel like I know
everything
about you. Well, I almost know you from high school. I know you from college.
Yep.
But I guess I'll let you acquaint people. I could just like run down a list.
What do you know about me?
Well, what do I think about when I think? Well, you know what? I do want to talk about you in high school because I don't. I mean, I feel like I kind of have a sense, but in my brain, I feel like we're going to cover comic books.
It's possible. Plausible.
Theater.
Yes.
And dentistry.
Well, actually, my grandfather was a dentist and my cousin was a dentist. So that.
Well, now see, I didn't know that. So if we want to just lean real hard into the dentistry stuff, that would probably be more entertaining.
It's called a mouth.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And in the mouth, there are teeth.
Go on.
And that's
like
all
a comb has.
Yes.
Okay.
It's your mouth comb. Okay. Or combs, I should say, because there's a top row and a bottom row.
That's how you do your hair, right?
Yeah. I have those novelty mouth combs that I run through my hair.
Now, do you wind it up so it sort of chatters?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, it depends on the style.
The nice body that you need. It's so stupid. And that's a sketch, ladies and gentlemen. A very short, very poor sketch.
That's a sketch. We used to say that a lot.
I guess we did, didn't we?
Sketch group. Oh, that's a sketch. 90% of the time, it was not a sketch.
That's true. That's true. But the difference between us, the difference in the level of us saying that would be, I would say that and never write whatever that sketch was, and then you would maybe write it and probably date
and then
it
realize
and
that
for
it
sure
wasn't
write
sketch.
It. Yeah. And then we would perform those sketches.
Right.
Bay Area?
Yes. Well, so high school was Bay Area. When before I was 5 years old, we'd moved about 5 different times.
Did I know that? I'm sure I knew that, but I guess it's not something we talk about all the time.
Probably. And I lived in San Jose. I was born in Mountain View, and then my parents had a house in San Jose, but then my mom and dad got divorced, and then my brother and I went to go live with our grandparents for about a year while my mom went to paramedic school in Southern California. And then we came to Southern California, and then we moved to back and forth to the Bay Area a couple of times. And
I don't remember that. I don't remember you ever living down here, even when you were very,
I mean, I was a wee lad. I was, it was like kindergarten. I did kindergarten in the first half of first grade here, and then we moved back because the schools weren't great at that time. We were public school kids, and it was a little rough.
But. I'm sorry about the dog hair. You just had to brush off your knee. Whitley is shedding because it's the summer. I could brush her for 2 hours every day.
Mrs. Peel's is the same way. It's and she does not like.
I think I'm just gonna
either.
Have her put down. I saved her long enough. She had 2 good years.
Yeah.
She wouldn't have had those 2 years.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what? If I don't brush her every day, it's possible we'll all be smothered by her own fur and then it won't. And then I'll go down with the ship. Is that how that works?
Yeah, that's the way it works.
That's the expression.
Is she here?
They are. I put them in the bedroom because she'll monopolize everything as she does with Salon and everything else.
She's such a narcissist.
She's very narcissistic. And this is my narcissistic podcast. Start your own podcast, Whitley. All right, listen. And so do you feel like all of that moving around is what made you the artist that you are today?
I honestly don't really remember it. Yeah. It was just normal.
It gets in there, though.
Yeah. But we settled down and about like first grade, middle
and
of
your,
first grade.
And your younger brother is how much younger than you for the listener?
My younger brother is 8 or 9 years younger than me. My older brother is 2.5 years older than me. So when we were moving around, that was me and my older brother. So I was the youngest at that point.
That's funny. I don't know why. Okay. That makes sense. For some reason in my head, he was like off doing his own thing from really early on.
my little brother?
No, your older brother.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Because, you know, in the last few years that we lived in San Francisco, I saw him far less, but I saw your little brother, it seems, all the time.
Right.
And
by little, we mean huge. He's
quite tall. He's quite tall.
Yeah.
So the Bay Area is, in your case, more of San Jose?
Silicon Valley. When we settled, we were in Sunnyvale, and it's...
When you settled, it almost makes it sound like you're a pioneer.
Put down our stakes, and we had 50 acres and a mule. Uh-huh. That was someone smuggling drugs. we just had them.
Got it.
So I mostly grew up in Sunnyvale, and I went to, in terms of high school, I went to the same high school Steve Jobs went to.
Mm-hmm. That explains why you love computers so much.
I love them. I was on the edge of computers where like they weren't a thing yet, but then I was like sort of old enough where like they were starting to be a thing, but then we didn't have one till way late, so it was like I've never been
to be so to be so close to where it was all happening, which now there are shows about, of course, and then but to still be kind of on the periphery of it.
Yeah.
Have you watched Silicon Valley or?
Yeah, I love it.
You know what I can't admit that I don't watch Silicon Valley. It's not that I don't watch it. It's just it's one of those shows where I just know everyone on it, and so it's not an escape for me.
Sure.
But I love all the guys on it. But I do watch Halt and Catch Fire. Because I enjoy drama.
Know anyone on it?
Because I watch drama all the time instead of comedy, and I think it's so good. That's another show that
I saw,
like,
the pilot of Halt and Catch Fire. So we haven't watched the rest of it yet.
I mean, listen, do I think it's so good? I'm sure I've talked about this before. Do I think it's so good? Like, I think it's the best thing on television. I don't know, but it's very stylish. And I'm very interested in that era. The music's great.
They did a great job with the lead lady's hair. Oh, she totally looked like it. She just had that 80s. I can't remember the actress, but she really reminded me of someone.
I mean, she's kind of a newcomer. I think she's Canadian. She was maybe a model, but Mackenzie something. She's great.
Just reminds me of of the look of like 80s.
Absolutely.
You know, teenage actress.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, it's great.
But again, Silicon Valley, just to give it, the thing they do really great is that it's a sitcom, but it's got like a narrative. Like, it's not like, oh, they have a wacky adventure, this, and then we just start from scratch. Like, each thing like sort of ends on a cliffhanger and leads into the next
That's cool
story.
To serialize it like that.
Yeah.
But listen, I want to get back to the X-Files.
Please.
I feel like I'm wasting my time listening to your childhood.
And one of them does not believe, even though she has seen every episode,
countless,
that he is right.
Countless stuff.
Yeah.
Were you a skeptical kid? Were you fascinated by that stuff? And were you skeptical or were you a believer? I will say,
I was not skeptical.
I also wanted to believe desperately.
I was not skeptical. I thought that I was being abducted by aliens.
When? Just in general?
Just in general. I remember there was this book called Communion. You remember Whitley Strieber?
Was it a show or a movie?
It was a terrible movie with Christopher Walken.
I was going to say, because I get that confused with The Prophet, which is also Christopher Walken.
Okay.
And I've never seen Communion or read it.
Don't,
or taken it.
You don't. Don't need to. Mm-hmm. But basically the premise was that people have lost time and, you know, you have... You cover memories for being abducted by, and you know, just like the romance of, oh yeah, I'm one of the special ones who's being abducted by aliens and gonna have adventures and stuff. But like, I you know, had these vivid dreams as a kid of these flying grandmas in my room, and my mom's like, oh yeah, that's probably a cover story.
Let's back up to flying grandmas.
Flying grandmas.
How many grandmas?
I don't
and
even
were
know.
Were they your grandmas?
This is just what I was told, that I'd wake up
you
and
were
talk
so
about
young.
All of
okay,
these
gotcha.
Flying grandmas that were in my room, so which were obviously just aliens. They were grays with their big eyes probing me. I don't know why I wanted that so much.
If you could come up, a child would relate, would compare an alien to grandma.
Right. But at that point, I wasn't aware of aliens, that they were a thing. So that was me just giving a name to these that were in my
room. Got it. So do you feel like, I mean... Having explained that, that sounds like you're hearing back from your mom something that reinforces it.
Right,
so
exactly.
Which came first?
Didn't even have a memory of it. Yeah. But then I totally believed in ghosts and like didn't want to get out of bed in the middle of the night till I walked to the bathroom in case there was a ghost out there. Totally afraid of the dark.
What if your mom took it a step further and she scarred you? She gave you like a weird scar and this, I don't know, it just appeared one day. I know you don't remember what happened. Oh, mom.
That would be a great prank to pull on your kids to
make
them think
they've
been abducted.
It's like alien Munchausen syndrome. Munchausen by alien by proxy syndrome.
I think we have a new movie.
That's a sketch.
That's not a movie.
Just replaced movie with sketch with movie now.
Yeah, just bigger dreams.
You thought that there were ghosts and you were afraid that a ghost would get you between
or just scare me or I don't even know what I was just afraid of the unknown.
Did you ever go to the Winchester Mystery House? That's not far from Sunnyvale.
Yes, absolutely.
As a child?
Yeah.
That can't have helped either.
Yeah, that and watching Poltergeist on HBO.
Same. That... By
face
the way,
being
if anything
pulled
scarred
off?
Me on the inside. Yeah, that's for all the horrifying stuff that happens in that movie, and there's a lot as a kid.
Yeah.
That one, the face peeling off was the most, like the thing I had the nightmares about the most.
I remember as a kid, like knowing all everything that happens. We didn't have the internet, but like, oh, in Indiana Jones, they eat bugs and someone's heart gets ripped out. Like, knew everything going in for some reason.
Yeah.
And
that's funny. Just from word of mouth, people have somehow got there before you did.
Yeah.
Spoilers. Well, now we know Optimus Prime dies in the cartoon version of the movie.
And Mola Ram pulls out a heart.
And did anything ever, other than the flying grandmas, did you have any indication that there was a reason to kind of be afraid? Did you have any experiences that felt like, oh, I don't know, this is pretty...
No, I guess I was just a neurotic, scared child.
You were terrified
of the unknown.
Transferring your fear of the unknown onto real, legit things like ghosts.
Yeah.
I understand that. I feel like I was afraid of a lot, but I wasn't afraid. I wanted those things to be real. Like, sure. I desperately wanted to have an encounter with a ghost.
Yeah.
I don't feel I was afraid. I mean, even, but why was, well, I was definitely afraid of bugs and spiders.
Also, as a kid, you're encouraged to believe ridiculous things. Yeah. Santa Claus, Easter Bunny, you know.
Well, where do you fall on that? Because I think it's great.
I don't think that Santa Claus exists.
But I mean, like...
No? About encouraging children to believe? Yeah. I don't know. I mean, because it's totally fun, you know, to believe in magic and stuff. But also, you are lying to your kids. Thankfully, I don't have kids, so I don't have to make that decision.
Yeah. Well, you might have to make that decision about other people's kids. That's true. It's your responsibility to pull them aside.
All of them listening to this podcast will know.
I would say the average age of listener is 4 years old over my podcast.
You should put a warning in front of this one so that they know.
I will.
That there's magic
spoilers.
While
there's no explicit language, there is serious magic spoilers.
Bringing it back to high school, I actually did a ghost hunt.
In
high school, because okay, so my grandparents' house. This is another reason why I believed in goats and ghosts.
Yeah, one of them is more provable than the other, I think.
My grandfather, who was the dentist, they had this house in Los Altos, and you know, I lived there for like a year or year and a half.
Where's Los Altos? Near Sunnyvale. I get those suburbs confused.
I'm trying to think how to explain it. Well, you've been to Sunnyvale. It's where Rooster Teeth Feathers
was. Oh, for sure. No, I'm sorry. I don't mean I get Sunnyvale confused with other ones. I mean, I get, in general, anything south of San Francisco. Well, and also I have an uncle who lives in Palo Alto.
Me too. Like, not living there for years, I don't remember where anything is. It's like, yeah. I go back to San Francisco and like, I kind of know where I am. Like,
well,
the map sort of gets
but
fuzzy.
But Los Altos, that's confusing for me. Because
near Palo Alto and
there you go.
Stanford.
Okay.
That sort of
area. Then I know it. Okay, so they had a creepy house?
It's a lovely mid-century modern house. But always like had like, you know, you get like just sort of a weird feeling that people...
I think that's called the heebie-jeebies.
The heebie-jeebies, yes. I always had the heebie-jeebies at night sleeping in this room. And that was one of that's where it comes from. That's where my sort of fear of getting up and going to the bathroom comes from.
Yeah, okay.
And not wanting to, and being, not being able to sleep and being afraid. And just like, you know... going around a corner and just feeling like, oh, it's going to be around that corner. Just you get like this weird
sense of unease. Yeah.
Sense of unease. Exactly. And I remember just offhandedly mentioning it to my mom once. Cause I think I was going to, go house sit or something for my grandfather. And, she says, oh yeah. Cause of the ghost. And like, what ghost? What are you talking about? And so when the house was built and the guy bought it before it was finished and the original owner, and he would go every day and he would watch them building his house. This is the story. I don't know if it's true.
I already love it.
And then he died in the master bedroom. And then the story goes that every night at like about 2 a.m., there are these weird sounds that come from what is now the den, but used to be the master bedroom, down the hall, past the room where I was, and into the kitchen. And it's this like popping sound, this weird sort of popping sound. And
he used to pop and lock.
he was a breakdancer. He pioneered the breakdancing industry. A friend and I, we wrote columns for the school newspaper, so we're like, well, let's go do a ghost hunt and we'll write about it. And so we get some snacks and we're basically doing a stakeout and just goofing around. And we have all of the ghost hunting equipment, the recorder and something to measure the temperature. And
And like a barometer?
Some cheap thing that I'm sure didn't even really work correctly.
Did you get it from a place that was like, this will help you catch ghosts?
I don't know. No, but I had learned about it from a book that I bought that I still have that I read. It was called The Encyclopedia of Ghosts and Spirits by these ghost hunters. And it had like a section in front about how to ghost hunt. Anyway, so we do this thing, and my brother's there house sitting, and my friend Brett and I are there ghost hunting, and my brother's asleep, and like, you know, we're just joking around and it's all fun. And then like 2 a.m. comes around and the popping starts on schedule, and my friend like gets really creeped out, and like we can hear these, like, it almost sounded like creaking noise. It's carpet, but it sounded like creaking.
Yeah,
coming towards the door, and we had a video camera and we were recording, and not, you know, didn't see anything. So we're finally like, let's go and see if we can see anything. It's like my friend's like, oh, I don't want to go out the door. We got up, we go out the door, and we're looking, and like we can hear these sounds all around us, and we heard it sounded like.
Yeah,
a cup
like
or something
got set down.
Getting set down in the kitchen. My brother's still asleep at this point. My friend's freaking out, and then we are talking, trying to make contact, and then eventually it quieted down. And my friend was like, "I can't sleep here." Uh-huh. And we got in the car and we left.
Well, what do you think it was?
I mean, after reading that book, Spook, you know, that there's a lot. It could have been. You know, some sort of water pipes, or my grandfather was like, "It's the pipes." And on schedule
at 2 a.m. when no one's running schedule? Any water anywhere.
But it had to be something weird, some
because
sort of electrical
the end of the
thing.
Story is or, you don't believe in ghosts,
right?
Look, guys, I don't mean to overly focus.
And I don't
on
believe
ghosts.
In Beatles. I just believe in me.
I understand,
Yoko.
I understand. I understand. I don't. I, first of all, I did not plan to talk this much about the supernatural at all. But and while you were talking, I was feeling guilty about that. Like, why am I prodding?
Why are we
much?
Talking about this?
And then I remembered that you presented on ghosts for
always
Salon
been obsessed
and the selling.
Yeah.
And you have been obsessed with it, and that was a great presentation on ghosts.
Should I do it right now for everyone?
Yeah, would you?
And, I'll see if I can find my notes.
And then the selling is just like one of my favorite things I've ever been a part of.
Oh,
I'm so proud. Which, guys, if you haven't seen it, you need to get going on that. It's a great... It's on Chiller a lot, but it's you can get it... Where else can you get it?
You can get it on Amazon,
great,
iTunes,
great.
TheSellingTheMovie.com, and that has links to all the places where it's at. But, you know, if you're cheap, which we all are, go to Chiller and look it up, and they've been playing it a lot recently.
It's I'm so proud of it. It's just a really, it's such a well-written script. And then what you guys were able to do with the amount of money you have is astonishing to me.
Well, thank you. And you are fantastic.
I had a lot of fun.
Everyone remarks on how great you are.
Well, and again,
and you get top billing on the...
Last week. Oh,
on
yeah. The... Someone tweeted that, huh? Oh, so, so silly. Yeah, that was really fun. Well, do you remember? So when you were younger... Like, when did that cross over? And also, did you believe in God? And it did all of those things that you believed in that seemed otherworldly kind of come to an end at the same time? Or was there sort of a progression?
Yes, I believed in God.
I love that I tacked on believing in God after a ghost.
Right. I believe in gods, ghosts, or God, or Trinity, whatever. Ghosts, Santa Claus, all that stuff.
Aliens.
And then, you know, like the Santa Clauses and the Easter Bunnies, they faded away around third grade. And then I started getting disillusioned with organized religion and saw organized religion as something that was... not really.
Did you guys go to church regularly?
We did. When I lived with my grandparents, we went every Sunday and got donuts afterward. Winchell's
nice.
Donuts.
Rewards.
Yeah. Reward system. But totally was a believer and got confirmed and took.
Would you pray at night?
Yeah.
And did you feel like you were getting answers?
I mean, I did the Lord's Prayer every night and, or I'd, you know, pray for something, you know, bless this person and this person and this person and let us not die.
Lord, I'm not asking for much.
Yeah,
I'd rather
just
not
don't,
die.
Don't let me or anyone I know and like die. And then like when in confirmation class, I always had these questions about like, well, like if humor is a defense mechanism, and for like bad things, and then heaven is perfect, then is there no laughter in heaven?
Oh my God,
because
I love that that's where your head went. It's amazing.
You know, like stuff like that, or like, you know, if like the town of Jericho, and like you know, what about all the innocent people that lived in the town of Jericho? Like they all got killed, but that was God's will to like kill all these people.
Yeah.
And
anything like that, any big blight, like even Noah's Ark, I remember thinking, no, you're telling me that every person on earth was wicked and deserved to die?
Right.
Except for him and his family?
Right.
That is harsh.
Yeah. God's a tough guy.
He's a toughie.
And then, so, but then I still sort of believed even into college, and it wasn't until, it was a very gradual process of sort of peeling back the layers of like, well, you know, if I grew up in ancient Rome, would I be believing in Zeus? And like, you know, it's so much of it of belief systems are from like your environment and situations. Sure. And it wasn't really much of a choice. And just reading and doing, you know, research on religious history and like where this stuff came from is like, meh, I don't really believe anymore.
Yeah. Was that a tough conversation to have with any of your family?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, no one, everyone in my family is still religious, and no one is really happy that I don't believe in God anymore. When my mom was dying, that was hard, you know, when she, you know, she gave me a Bible for like her confirmation Bible, and it was like, you know, I know you don't believe, but I would just, you know, I'd like to see you again, something,
oh, God.
You know, that's really tough. Yeah. My grandfather took me out to lunch and was like, you know, why don't you believe in God? And, you know, have to like explain, you know, I'm not going to convince him, you know, yeah. He's lived his whole life believing in God, and yeah. That's, you know, worked for him. But I mean, now it's at the point where everyone just sort of, you know, accepts it. But.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember. I know I had a couple conversations, maybe more than two, but conversations with my maternal grandmother when she knew that I had stopped going to church and stuff. I don't ever remember her, like, in terms of not asking the questions you don't want answers to. I don't think she ever explicitly said, so what's up? You don't believe in God anymore? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think she just... The only thing that she could stand to address was just, you know, I can't believe you're not going to get married in the temple, and I've just wanted more for you, and
yeah.
Stuff like that, which is hard. It's really rough. Hard. It was so much harder for me to disappoint my grandparents on my mom's side than it was to disappoint my mom.
I think
that
it would have
been step removed.
Easier for my grandfather if I had been gay than not
really?
Believing in God.
Interesting.
Because, yeah, I just don't. You know,
did he think either way you wouldn't go to heaven with everybody else?
My grandfather is conservative, but he's also he's got a great heart. He's just a wonderful guy who will, like, when presented with individuals, will then, like,
right.
change his, you know, tune
right,
and accept,
right.
accepts everybody as individuals.
Yeah.
But I just think that, like, believing in God, he would have been able to take, you know, almost anything.
Uh-huh.
But I think that really, yeah, he's not happy about
it. What
that.
If you were like, Grandpa, I murdered three people, but I'm pretty sure God's mad at me about it.
But I'm sorry about it. I ask for forgiveness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He might be better off. He might be happier with
that. Yeah, maybe.
Okay.
No.
Too late now. Mistake made. And what else were you, so where did the comic books come in? Did you start reading those when you were really little, or did you do that in high school?
Second grade. I think
Ooh.
My first comic book was, I watched, cartoons after school. You
sure.
come home,
you're a
you
human
watch
being
cartoons
with heart and soul,
G.I. Joe mm-hmm. and He-Man and all that stuff. And then there was this convenience store that was near us, and they had comic books, and there was a comic book of G.I. Joe that had, Baron von Destro on the cover holding a mummy that he's stealing out of this
Ooh.
Tomb. And the mummy was, it was like King Tut or some like famous leader or something. And he was creating the perfect leader for the Cobra because everyone had lost confidence in Cobra Commander because
Wait,
he's
he was
always losing.
Unravel the mummy.
Well,
mummy
he was doing was taking the DNA from famous leaders, the Genghis Khan and all these different
sure.
people, and splicing them together. I think there's seven of them to splice together to create Serpentor.
It is interesting because I don't think as
Why
a, as
I
a child.
This?
I'm so glad you do. As a child who had no, I mean, I was definitely interested in He-Man and She-Ra, Princess of Power.
Who wouldn't be?
But I had no sense of G.I. Joe, so I definitely didn't realize there was anything supernatural like
right.
to do with it at all. I thought it was just a bunch of army guys fighting other army guys.
It was
guys
army guys with lasers that mm-hmm. could blow up planes, but they had very good ejector seats that could that you could eject and parachute out from very quickly, so no one ever actually died in any of the battles, which was a great
just
way to have
stuff
war.
Up long yeah. enough, sure.
Yeah,
sure.
But yeah, I think the Serpentor stuff was later on when you know they well, Cobra Commander is really an inept leader, so we need to like spice things up a bit. But it was science,
sure. Yeah,
no,
DNA
that was science.
Absolutely, Jurassic I stand corrected. Sort of, I shouldn't yeah. say supernatural. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Thank you.
I think Serpentor might have
Serpentor might have been like super
the...
strong too and stuff. Now that I think of it, yeah, he had yeah. like a flying chariot. It was like a cobra-headed chariot. Uh-huh. He'd fly into battle with it, which I had the toy.
Old school, but new school.
And there was Sergeant Slaughter, who was a wrestler, but then he became a G.I. Joe. He was a real dude, WWF or whatever was the equivalent back then. And you couldn't buy the toy. You had to get a bunch of proofs of purchase and mail in to get the Serpentor act, or not,
well,
to
wait,
get the Sergeant Slaughter
action figure. But G.I. Joe was a cartoon, right? Not live action.
Yeah, well, no, it was a cartoon, but there was a real life, it was like a crossover, like, oh, this wrestling's popular, so let's have this military-themed wrestler join the G.I. Joe.
Okay, so it was a cartoon version of him.
Yeah.
And from the real, that's complicated.
Yeah, and you can get the toy. You could also get the toy of Anakin Skywalker if you got proofs of purchase and mailed in for it as well, which yeah. I did. The old sort of, at the end
could
of Return
not...
of the Jedi.
Oh, okay.
Where he's standing as a ghostly, his ghostly old self is standing
oh,
next
sure,
to him.
Oh, sure, sure. Who played Anakin Skywalker ghost?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Nobody ever, no. We don't talk about him.
We don't talk about him.
so much. I remember his garb. I remember his gentle face. And I remember thinking that is for sure not James Earl Jones. Those are the things I remember
yeah,
about it.
Yeah.
What kind of comic books were you drawn to beyond G.I. Joe?
Superhero stuff. I think The Hulk was maybe my first superhero comic book. Hulk, Spider-Man, and then it just like started getting everything. And, uh-huh. And they were like 75 cents at the time, which, you know, when you're a kid, that's, you know, you have to save up for it, but it's so much cheaper than, it's ridiculous now. It's
yeah.
like buying an actual book uh-huh. that takes you 5 minutes to read.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, anything superhero related, just, you know, especially the Marvel stuff is all like angsty, really teenager, preteen sort of emotions. Very sort of immature sort of power fantasies, what they are, which is now our popular culture.
It's pretty fun.
Yeah.
Well, do you have, did you have friends that you would talk about that stuff with? Like, would you trade comic books or was it a very...
Yeah,
kind
yeah.
Of,
my brother okay. would collect them as well. And so he, like we would buy the ones that the other one wasn't getting. So save
Smart.
On money.
Sure.
Yeah. So he'd get Transformers, I'd get G.I. Joe.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, we'd ride our bikes to the Sunnyvale Town Center.
Mm-hmm.
Great things keep happening at Sunnyvale Town Center. Great things. Okay. So that's what we'd play on the radio. But we would ride our bikes over to the comic store there and hang out and buy some books. And then we were in we formed a comic book club at our junior high.
Okay.
Had
so
like five
for
members.
You, so it was cool.
Yeah.
It
well,
wasn't like.
I mean, we. I never considered myself cool, so I didn't consider it cool, but it was definitely interesting and something
yeah.
that I enjoyed.
Okay. I'm trying to remember if I had a sense of comics when I was in junior high or even high school. I mean, I guess I must have, but I didn't. It wasn't something that I would have thought to go.
Right. Check out.
I never saw anyone. I don't think. I mean, the stuff that like I was given when I was in high school from like my punk friends were like weird graphic novel, comic booky kind of things. But I never had, you know this, but
well, as a kid, you didn't go to like the convenience store and play video games and have a Slurpee and
not really. Yeah. I would go. I feel like what I did when I went to the convenience store was go buy as much candy as I could possibly
right.
afford,
we did that.
Go somewhere quiet and gorge.
Right.
I didn't really play video games.
What was your
games.
Candy of choice?
In that period of time when I would like ride my bike to the convenience store, I would say I was probably purchasing a lot of Now and Laters.
I didn't get on the Now or Later bag until I didn't like black licorice.
I don't think Now and Laters are black licorice.
Aren't they?
No, that's...
I'm thinking of Good and Plenty.
You're thinking of Good and Plenty.
Now or Laters are the fruit-flavored ones?
Yeah, Now and Laters are like a really hard taffy. They're just little squares, like Starburst shapes.
Oh, wait, no. Yeah,
but Starbursts
okay,
are very chewy and you can
yeah,
swallow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The Now and Laters are, I don't know why. I mean, maybe it's because like now you eat it and then later you lose a tooth or
right.
you keep some in the
right,
back of your
like
mouth
super
or you can
hard,
only eat
right?
part of it. Yeah, part of it. They're really hard. And then eventually
you should really be eating them later,
they soften
not
up.
Now.
Yeah.
Maybe it's like you bite into it now
sun.
Or later. now and you hurt yourself.
Yeah.
Later
after you've had a dog suck on it for a while and it gets a little softer. But mm-hmm. yeah, I remember being real into like they had apple and cherry, banana.
Mm-hmm.
And anything like a taffy kind of stuff.
Okay.
What's that one? It was like Bitto Honey.
Yes.
I feel I explored all the candies. I mean, I was a candy freak.
Bitter Honey, I felt like was rare. Like, that was something that I would get at Halloween. Like, mm-hmm, when you go mm-hmm. to a house, and, oh, here's this
Does
exotic...
Does it have, like, a little bit of, like, a peanut butter chunk buried inside that?
It's certainly brown colored. I don't know if there's a peanut
like
butter
chunk
in
there. Like, someone else chewed up something for you, spit it gently into the gel forming of the Bitter Honey.
I'm going to say then... yes.
Okay.
I'm going to say that's
Tootsie
exactly
Pops, Tootsie Rolls. I mean, I just loved it all. Red Vines.
Mm-hmm.
Red Vines. I moved over to Twizzlers.
Mm-hmm.
Then back to Red Vines.
I was big on Spree.
Yeah. I have a Spree.
Sweet Tarts.
You like the sour.
Yeah.
Sweet Tarts and Spree. That makes sense.
But I was big on Junior Mints.
Yeah, Junior Mints are good. I think for a lot of the time, for me with Junior Mints, that felt like something my mom would get at the movies. And it seemed like mint. That's like toothpaste. Like, I want something that I know is candy.
Right.
And will not give me any freshness of breath at all. I want to have terrible breath.
Lick 'em Sticks?
What's a lick 'em? Oh, is that the candy
white
tart
candy thing that you lick dip and in stick the it in sugar, the pure sugar. Colored sugar?
Yeah, there's a lot. Do kids still eat, like, that much concentrated sugar or those things?
Oh, they eat more.
They do.
They put sugar in everything. They put it in their yogurt and...
Oh, like the yogurt has more sugar content, or they sprinkle it in there.
It's called Go-Gurt and it's green.
Yeah, you're right. I guess there's something so straight ahead about a pack of sugar that's pink that I would imagine parents would be like, you can't have that, but you can have Go-Gurt, and the Go-Gurt would have the same amount of sugar, but they would feel better about it. But
well,
now
we had the granola bars, which are like, were just candy bars that didn't
so
taste
good.
As good as... is a regular
They're pretty
bar.
Good though. Oh, those chewy oats, that's still a thing where, I mean, I think that's still a lie we tell ourselves with granola bars, even like gluten-free granola bars. You're like,
right.
I mean, this is great for me. And then you look and you might as well be eating a Snickers, which by the way, Snickers are delicious.
Yeah.
So good. Yeah. A lot of candy gorging, but like that's none of that involved. I mean, there's no candy in comic books. So.
And there's no crying in baseball.
Why would I? And
there's
no
lots of candy ads in comic books.
Well, maybe
bubblegum ads
enough to drag me in. Did you have conversations in your comic book club like people do at cons now? That's like, if you could be.
Yes.
And did you get into arguments over which of you could be? Did you have sort of?
Oh, we
like,
played
avatars
a role playing game. We played
you
the
did?
Marvel superheroes role playing game where you could create your own superhero, and I think we actually just created characters more than we actually played the game because he's like, no, I don't like this power, I'm going to create a new game.
Well, that's kind of like Dungeons and Dragons, it seems like a little bit too. Did you ever play that
where the video game
like the game like the board
it was exactly
that.
Like that except with
because
superheroes.
It's more interesting to create those characters and like
we played
that
too
because you're a great writer, so it's fun to me that you would take things that you loved and sort of go, well, what would
Make
my
stories.
Version of that be?
Well, I wanted to be a comic book artist when I was a kid.
That's right.
And
you are a great illustrator.
Well, I have talent but no craft. It was, you know, I was like sort of, I can doodle, but I never like, we would take, my mom would sign me up for like a summer class and like cartooning, like, great, I'm gonna learn like what I'm supposed to do to like ink and whatnot. And I get there and it's like, okay guys, so the comic strip has 5 panels, and it was like it was a babysitting thing for,
right,
you know,
right.
It wasn't like an actual like art class,
right? What about those things in the backs of magazines? What would be like, can you draw this parrot? If so, you might write away for this art class.
I never
via
thought
the mail.
That always seemed like something that grown-ups do. Like, oh, I'll learn when I go to I'll go off and I'll study how to do art.
Yeah.
Because all the classes that we tried to take were, you know, ineffectual.
Yeah.
But I wanted to do that. And I think prior to that, I wanted to be a Disney animator because I loved cartoons. And then that transformed into, oh, comic books are cool. And I wanted to do that.
Yeah.
Draw superheroes.
Did you ever write your own comic book?
I did. Now that you mention it. A friend of mine named Jason Borum, who I can't find on Facebook or anything.
It's probably because he's a secret agent.
He is.
Jason Borum.
He's in the Borum identity.
So we created in junior high, we created a comic called Mondo Man.
Okay. And I've heard of Mondo Man from you in the past.
And it was like 8 pages long, and we drew it and Xeroxed it and stapled it together and gave it out to everyone. And it started Mondo Man number 2 and never finished it.
Yeah, well,
I'm still working on it.
It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work.
For all of my junior high friends who are listening to this,
it's still coming.
It's coming.
It's still coming. Yeah. Now, let me ask you this. How many dates did Mondo Man get you? That sounds loaded. But I'm honestly curious.
None.
Were you going out with girls much in high school?
No, definitely not in junior high. I was very awkward.
Oh, yeah, that was junior high.
And didn't know, how to do that. And junior high, and then high school, not so much. I started, my first girlfriend was when I was 16.
Mm-hmm.
And
like your first girlfriend, like the first time you smooched anyone, really?
Yes.
Yeah.
Or maybe
so it wasn't
I was
just
17.
Like you kissed someone and then you, and then later on you had a girlfriend. It was like she was the girl.
She was, yeah.
Okay.
We were in a play together and,
were you doing theater all through?
I was doing theater at that
high school?
Point.
Okay.
Yeah. But I was always very like not good with like knowing how to, just too scared and weird and awkward. And, didn't quite realize, girls are just human beings and you just talk to them like like you would your friends, and then you find out if you like each other, and then so lessons there learned.
Did you have like friends that you had crushes on that you kept quiet about?
Absolutely. Well, kept quiet about to them, but talked to everyone else.
Did they find out?
I'm sure there was probably like, okay, well, don't tell them. But don't tell them that I know that you're telling them, or it's just
if
like
she seems at all interested. If you mention, amazing,
right? And what is a relationship going to be at that point anyway? Just we're all kids. Like I was looking at pictures because you wanted me to have a high school picture for the website, for the Facebook. And I was like, oh, God, we're just kids. Look at us. We're just dopey little kids. And when you're that age, you just feel like everything's so important and like,
I don't think I've ever felt, I don't know if this is true, but I'm going to say it in a brainstormy kind of way, but in one sense, I don't think I've ever felt older than at the end of my senior year and like the beginning of college in a way.
Right.
Like, I think I felt like I've never felt maybe more mature.
Yeah.
Because the older I get, the more of a child I feel. So is that sort of the crescendo of like, I peaked somewhere around there when that was when I was like, I'm pretty sure I'm the most mature person in the world. And then from then on, I sort of gradually was like, I don't really know so much. Right. And like, maybe I like, oh, this? Oh, if I'm still surprised by stuff, I guess I'm not that mature.
Right. We think we know everything. And
we
learn the wise man is the one who knows that he knows nothing.
Maybe.
It's very misogynistic that it's a wise man instead of a wise person.
Well, men are smarter than women. We all know that. but then conversely, when I read, like, what's confusing to me about reading journals from that period of time, did you ever keep diaries or anything?
Yeah.
Is that on one hand, I am appalled at how immature I was and how much of it is just about feelings and like angst and questioning. But then on the other hand, I'm also very surprised at my maturity level and at my writing.
Yeah.
Like I look at the writing, I'm like, I don't think I'm that much better of a writer than I was then.
Yeah.
And so that's an interesting juxtaposition.
Kind of better.
Smarter.
Maybe?
Yeah. Yeah. Because you're doing
it
more.
At least prose. Like I haven't written, like a journal or whatever. But like I've looked at some of that old stuff and I'm like, this kid's pretty smart.
And to feel compelled to do it. Like it was not a chore.
Right.
To feel like you had that much going on in your head. That I needed to take pen to paper.
Right.
And, and I was like copying down T.S. Eliot poems and lyrics to Peter Gabriel songs and stuff, like
it helps that it's like such an emotional time in your life too, that you have like stuff that feels big to write about.
Absolutely.
Whereas now it's like, dear journal, today I got up and I had a smoothie and I.
Yeah. Dear
and
journal,
I checked my Facebook.
I really feel like you're the only one who understands me. That smoothie was delish. Yeah, that's true. I mean, I guess that's true. Like,
when I really think about like the times that I'm most motivated to do something like that, it is because I'm terribly hurt by something mm-hmm. or I'm really excited about something. And I have to figure out a way to get my head in order.
Well, that's how we figure stuff out is yeah. by sorting as artists is to sort through it and write about it or, you know, use yeah. it as inspiration for something and use it and channel it in some way.
Do you hand write when you have ideas and thoughts or do you mostly sit down to a computer now?
I jot down notes. Yeah. And I'll like map things out. And then when I'm ready to write, I'll like maybe outline on a start typing an outline. Cause mm-hmm. I just have these notebooks filled up with gibberish that need to then be sort of sorted and made into sense. But yeah, originally I'll hand write down an idea.
Yeah. I just wonder when we'll get to the point where like no one's handwriting anything down and you're just talking into your phone voice memo or you're just typing the words. Like, are younger people still scribbling stuff or is it all going to be?
I mean, I guess it's going to, for me, that'll never happen because I just don't like talking out, like, and want to listen to my voice back. Like, I used to like when I started
doing stand-up
and
stuff. But you can do that. You can just dictate into your phone and it will be writing. You know, like with a text or with notes.
That's true. That's how behind I am. I haven't really explored that. But I don't know. I like something about the tactility of writing it down and trying to transfer it in that way. I don't feel as articulate talking. Like I'm doing this podcast and being like, I could say what I want to say better if I just wrote it down.
Sure.
And then, you know, so in the same way, I don't think that I could ever, because I bought like a little hand recorder when I was 15. I got this book called How to Be a Stand-Up Comedian. And like, I would put ideas in there and then listen, you know, and it's just like, didn't do it. I don't think I had any ideas that worked from that, from that.
Did you ever use that same recorder for writing for the school paper? Cause that's pretty cute too.
Yes.
I mean, you paint a pretty cute picture. Like you paint a cute picture of being,
I was adorable,
a theater kid who's like writes for the paper and reads comic books and you know, and I'm sure we talked about this when we first met it was not like at the beginning of college, I should say, guys, like it was sort of at the end, but, or even after, But I do feel like I would have been friends with you. Like I can see all of that stuff. I can just drop right into my world and know like, well, this is when we would have hung out. This is when we wouldn't have. Like we would have hung out in this context, and then I would have gone off and like smoked pot.
Right.
But he wouldn't have. You know what I mean? Like I can definitely see that. But we were in theater together. The whole thing. I see all of that really clearly. And I'm not being condescending. I'm being precious about myself too. Like we were adorable, but it's very easy for me to picture that. So you were into comedy even then?
Yeah. Like,
and reporting.
And reporting and comedy reporting. I interviewed Steve Allen for the school newspaper.
Oh, look at those two things coming together. I didn't know that when I said it.
Yeah.
That's a big deal.
It was.
I did know about this, by the way.
I have to step back. So
for our friendship, I did know about this. For the podcast, tell us all about it.
So I decided when I was 15 that I wanted to be a stand-up comedian because I had grown up. My mom was like big into comedy and would show me like movies that I probably shouldn't have been watching, like all Mel Brooks movies, which like, you know, History of the World's got some dirty stuff in it, and you know.
Yeah, but my dad was the same way. I was exposed to that kind of blue comedy so early, but like exposed to violence much later. So such a sensitive, tender kid,
right?
Get really upset. But the blue stuff was like, I mean, that's pretty harmless in terms of, you know, seeing it too young.
But like the video stores started popping up when I was young. And so we'd go and we'd get like all the HBO comedy specials. Like we'd Whoopi Goldberg's One Woman Show and Robin Williams and Steve Martin. And like she would show all of that to me. And I feel like when we had HBO eventually, like watching Louis Anderson and just like really steeped in stand-up and loving that world. So then I wanted to be a stand-up comedian. I bought this book called How to Be a Stand-Up Comedian by Judy Carter. And then it sat around for like a year.
Right.
And then I started like writing stuff and I was like, I want to do this. And I can't drive. Mom, can you drive me an hour and a half to San Leandro to go do the only open mic that's in the area?
God, that's so great.
And so my mom drove me to Tommy T's in San Leandro.
Which is one of the least offensive comedy club names I've ever heard.
Yeah, indeed. And we get there and it's closed. They had advertised an open mic night, but there's no one there.
Oh, no.
And my mom talked the guy into letting me go on stage anyway. So it's my mom and the manager of this club. And then I'm on stage and I do my little act for them. And my mom said that she was so relieved that I was funny because she didn't know how she was going to.
Oh, yeah.
So then she would drive me to different open mics.
God, this is almost like an alternate universe Rushmore. Like, I could see this as a Wes Anderson movie set in the 80s or the early 90s, and it would be really cute.
Yeah. So then...
I gotta call that guy.
My mom... There was a comedy club about 5 minutes away from our house that did not have open mics, and my mom called them about trying to set one up, and it didn't really work for them because it was Silicon Valley, and they just didn't really have a lot of people who would come out for that, mm-hmm. whatever. It wasn't like a big city or whatever. San Francisco, they had open mics that were really like...
And that's probably people were just going up to see that because that's where like it was a big comedy mecca.
Right, right. And we tried that you'd have to go to San Francisco at like 7 and like put your name in and then they draw it out of a hat and then maybe you get to go on or not. And like we did that and didn't get on. And anyway, so my mom called these people and tried to set up an open mic. They weren't really interested. She said, well, what if we did like... high school shows, because high school students want to like comedy too. And so what if we did these shows, and if you think my son is funny enough, I'll organize it for free and you let my son host if you think he's good enough. And it's like I had like a tape or whatever, and they're like, yeah, whatever, if you're gonna work for free, sure, we'll let him. And so then we started doing those shows, and then my mom found out that the owner was looking to sell the club. And so then then she decided, well, okay, I'll go into the comedy business. And she bought a comedy club.
Amazing.
And then that was a couple years of her life, was running this comedy club. And I would go and I would, you know, I couldn't host all the time, but I would host every other week or whatever. And but then when they took over the club, they booked Steve Allen to come do a show. And so then that's how I got the interview with him for my school paper.
Well, when did you decide that stand-up wasn't the route that you were most interested in?
It's seeing all the comics come through, there were a lot of, and doing the open mic circuit, there were a lot of sort of sad, dark people that I didn't want to become. Mm-hmm. Not that there aren't fantastic stand-ups who don't become that.
Sure.
But just at my time, that was the sort of most of my experience was that. And so there was that. There was the dedication that it took to doing it and doing it all the time. And I had periods where like, okay, I'm going to focus on it. And I'm just going to do this. I'm going to go out every night and I'm going to try to get on stage. And I did that in college a lot, in between doing plays or whatever. I do like a month of stand up and then I get sort of tired of the life. And, you know, you it's very hard to have a personal life with it because your evenings are all tied up. And just eventually I just realized that I was better at other forms of storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
And doing sketches or acting, and which was always sort of the end goal anyway. Like my heroes were all like people like Steve Martin and Robin Williams who, you know, did stand up, but then that led to other things. Mm-hmm. So that was always sort of my main goal. And it's like, well, why not just focus on this other thing that you really want to do?
Sure. I mean, I don't blame you. All the things that you said are all really good reasons not to do it.
Every time I see a good stand up, I'm like, oh God, it's this, when you see a good one, it's such an art form, and they make it look so easy that it makes you, it fools you into thinking like,
anybody,
well, if I dedicated
this.
Myself,
right.
I could maybe.
Right. No, I feel the same. I mean, I feel the same way having had no training. No, I mean, I didn't have a book for one thing.
you can order that
I didn't
book
have the book how to be a comedian.
On Amazon.
Stand-up comedian. But yeah, I just don't, everything you just described to me, and especially coming into late, like I wasn't raised with any sort of a stand up that I
really
remember. Yeah, that's like my dad. It was all like movies. He probably liked Steve Martin. You know, I know he loved Woody Allen's stand up. But by the time I came along, it was like, well, here are all these great movies that I can just show my daughter, and you know, there wasn't really. I just don't remember any stand up. And so it just wasn't something that I felt strongly about. Except for Albert Brooks, Comedy Minus One. But even that album, I feel like I just did someone's podcast about that. I still feel like I had that in college. You know, it was not something that right. And I thought of stand-up as just like someone dumb, pushing too hard, trying too hard, like with a brick wall behind them.
Right.
That was my sense of what stand-up was. And what kind of music did you listen to, or were you into music when you were in high school?
Like stuff on the radio. Like I wasn't, I've never been like, oh, I know the names of the band. Like, oh, this song's cool. I like this song. But then I wouldn't know the band, and mm-hmm. then I wouldn't know like the lyrics. Because like so much rock music is like, what are they saying?
Yeah.
I don't really, man, this is cool. Whatever they're talking about. But you know, in high school, like I listened to Rolling Stones. I was very into like, I was like an oldies kid. Like I listened to the oldies mm-hmm. channel. Station.
Sure.
So Rolling Stones, Aerosmith.
Sure. Get in there. That's just something that
Bon Jovi.
Get it good.
Young Guns soundtrack. Young Guns 2, I mean, of course.
The good one. Because I just am always interested in people's relationships to like where they get their angst out or sort of where they feel understood. It sounds like you felt understood by the characters in comic books and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I felt understood by, you know, songwriters and
sure.
whatnot. And like those lyrics became so important.
I hadn't thought of it that way, but yeah, absolutely. You know?
I can't believe it, but it is nigh past time to get into a MASH game.
Oh, good.
But I think we've covered a lot of juicy territory. So, I'm going to start with some basics that I imagine everyone listening is probably like, well, you got to ask this. I'm going to ask this question because you guys, just so you know, every time I see anything in the X-Men world around, near, or with Gabe, I have to like pause it every 5 seconds and be like, now who's that? And what do they do? Okay, what's their power? So I'm going to use the X-Men because I know that you like that world a lot. So three X-Men, if you could be three X-Men.
Oh, geez. That's a great, great question. I was never a huge Wolverine fan, mm-hmm. but his power of healing was pretty awesome.
Let's get it in there.
I wouldn't necessarily want to be this guy, but I always loved this character called the Toad.
Oh, great. Is that, do you see him in the second one where he like flicks stuff with his...
He was in the first one with the terrible, infamous Halle Berry line where she says, what happens to a toad when it gets hit by lightning?
Yeah.
The same thing happens to everyone else.
Sure. Excuse me.
But
I'm a little allergy today. Sorry about the sniffs, everyone.
In the comic book, he's not Ray Park, like super martial arts, but he's this like the British rocker who's looks a little like a toad.
Oh, interesting.
From like the 60s.
Oh, like a Herman's Hermit
guy,
maybe, or
he
something
looks like that.
Yeah.
And he just looks ridiculous and he can jump really high. And he was like the most self-loathing character for whatever reason. I was like, you know, when you're like a kid and you're self-loathing, you're like, oh yeah, I feel ugly and toady sometimes.
Sure.
I'm not picking that one.
Fair enough.
Let's see. Cyclops, he can't see his eyes.
And if it's an X-Men power too, I don't want to say you have to be that character, but
okay.
Good space filler. Pick the groaner.
I mean, Jean Grey is the most powerful one there is. The Phoenix.
It's a lot of responsibility, though, just like Professor X.
It is a lot of responsibility.
It's hard, but I put her down, so now you're stuck with her.
Magneto. As a kid, I thought was Magneto.
Okay.
Because it's
fair
a
enough.
Magnet.
Yeah.
So, and then there was a cartoon that came out, and they were calling Magneto, and I was very...
Well, makes
upset.
You wonder who decided that. Like, I mean, I guess someone could have said, called Stan Lee and said, we want to make sure we're pronouncing this right. But it also is possible that that just slipped through.
Right.
And that's what everyone calls him now. Who knows? Or do they explain why?
Is that
it's
like an
action?
Is a Magneto a thing aside from being a person?
Not that I know of.
Is it like this magnetized machine from the 50s?
Toe. I don't think so.
Okay.
We got to get to the bottom of that.
But you don't call it a magnet.
No, exactly. What about which one do I like? I like the one who Alan Cumming plays in two.
Nightcrawler.
Yeah, Nightcrawler.
He bamfs.
Yeah. Is that what it is?
Well, that's the sound bamf. It makes when he...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. In the comic when you see the word.
Yeah.
I think I would want to be able to bamf.
Yeah, that's a good one. Rogue's got a great power. That's being true. Able to take other people's powers.
I know, but
then she can't touch people.
Can touch
it. It's very, they're all very, very sad.
I know. That's what's so great about
it. But Magneto's not sad. He's just like angry.
Yeah.
Which I guess comes from sadness.
It's true at all. Listen, it still all comes back. Don't worry. Okay. Next category is you can jump into the world of three books. Three books. The worlds are real. You can jump in and just be there and enjoy yourself.
Okay. Hobbit. The Hobbit.
Great.
Time and Again.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about,
which
guys.
You talked about that recently on a podcast.
I did.
I don't remember
which
one it was.
Might have been Colin Hanks.
Because
he loves time travel stuff,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
that's a great
I'm right
book.
There with you. Let's go. Oh.
Great book. It's like such a
role. You gave it to me.
I did.
Guys, it all comes full circle.
Yeah.
Gabe Diani is the reason that I love that book so much. And I've given it to countless people.
It's great.
Like, I don't think I have a copy because I keep giving it away. And then I'll order another one.
I can't believe they haven't made a movie out of it. It has been in development hell. Like, Robert Redford was going to make it at one point in the 70s. And, you know, it's just a great story.
It really is.
By the guy who wrote Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
I thought he only wrote those... Time and Again and Time After Time.
I don't know what else he wrote other than that, but yeah.
Interesting. God, I had no idea. What a talent.
Okay. Third book. Fahrenheit 451 is very dark. I don't want to go there, even though I love that book.
Fair.
A lot of the stuff that I like has a satirical darkness to it. So it's hard to pick up Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
There you go. Good pull. I just put Hiker's Guide. I don't have a lot of room on this.
I'll remember.
Three foods that you can have ad infinitum with no negative consequences. At the snap of a finger, it could be as specific as one great cookie you had one time, or it could be just cookies in general.
Okay. Burrito. Great. San Francisco style burrito from a place called Cancun.
Yeah, that sounds real good right now.
God,
I don't know the last time I had a burrito. I've not had a good gluten-free flour tortilla situation.
Oh, yeah.
There's just nothing, especially because, I mean, the only one I even know of is like frozen, and that's just it tastes like a 7-Eleven burrito that you would get in like Nuke, you know?
What if you went outside the U.S. where that's, but... I don't know where there would be good burritos.
Just corn. I mean, it's, you know, there's great corn tortillas, but it's not there's not an envelope situation like there is with a great chewy flour tortilla.
Yeah.
Burrito. Oh. Great, great, great pick. SF burrito. Cancun.
How was, is that the first one?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. German chocolate cake.
Mm.
That was always my birthday cake as a kid. And I love a good omelet.
Oh, okay. But what? All right. Do you think that omelets are bad for you?
No, but you said I could just have. Oh, this is.
Oh, yeah,
I can have them without
no
any
negative
consequences. Oh, okay. All right.
But listen, I don't want you to feel you're wasting your wish.
No. Then let's change it. It would definitely be something
decadent,
sugary. I think. If I say sugar, does that like a cheat where I can have anything that has sugar in it?
I guess that's true. Yeah.
Sugar.
I'll put that down. Good cheat. Wow. Really good idea. Fantastic. Okay. Next category. Listen, I got to get this out of the way because I felt real guilty doing this to Adam. I feel real guilty doing it to you. Everyone thinks it's so funny that I take this so seriously.
Oh,
but
it's
I do need three ladies.
Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah. Who did she pick? I don't remember.
I feel like she did a good job of picking like this character from this thing who's not real,
right.
Or like this young version of this person who's now dead anyway, kind
right.
of thing. I don't. She wasn't saying like Ryan Gosling, Brad
right.
Pitt.
She's
I don't not, think.
She's if she's like into those anyway. Guys, she does not let on. Here's my picks for her, and then I'll give you my.
Oh
picks
yeah,
for
no, this is good.
I think she would like young David Bowie.
Okay. Oh, that's good. I don't remember her saying that.
David Tennant.
Maybe that was there, but I don't know. Because I think she said David Tennant. I think we said like Gabe's enough like David Tennant that she doesn't need David Tennant.
I'll retract it.
Listen, I got to listen to that episode again.
She likes like the British. I mean, if I were British, I would be, because she likes the skinny British dudes. She likes Benedict Cumberbatch only as Sherlock.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
She finds him sexy as Sherlock, mm-hmm. but not as anyone else.
Mm-hmm. That's a fair distinction. I'm sure a lot of people feel that way.
And then... Bilbo Baggins.
Okay. So you picked those for Etta.
And then for me...
You know what? I'm going to write these down and that will be an actual category.
Okay.
Bilbo, Sherlock, we know which one, and Tennant. That will amuse her. That you used one of your math categories to give her somebody to have sex with.
Yeah. Okay, for me, I would choose Ellen Ripley from Aliens.
Oh, good one.
Which, like, everyone's talking about Fury Road and stuff, which is great, but it's like we've had this before. We're like,
yeah.
And growing up as a kid, I didn't think, like,
I haven't seen
Fury Road yet. Isn't it great that it's a female protagonist? And
right,
like, she was the protagonist, and I identified with her.
Yes.
And like,
yes.
I feel like we've taken such a step back in terms of,
yeah,
it's like
putting so much emphasis when it is
like we need to, because we've rolled because everything back. But so Ellen Ripley is awesome.
Great.
Shelley Duvall as Olive Oil.
Beautiful. Thanks for not letting me down on that one.
And Myrna Loy as Nora Charles from the Thin Man movies.
That's lovely. Classy. Class act. Okay, three vacation homes. I will say somewhere on the planet.
Okay.
So that leaves it open for some magic, but not like otherworldly.
Okay. This planet. Thank you for clarifying.
I really apologize. I should know my audience.
We're not in Rigel 4. Okay, this planet, vacation. Austria.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Boy, I seriously doubt you're going to say France.
I liked France.
We had the good fortune of being in France at the same time as a total coincidence, and it was really fun.
That was fun.
Yeah.
Okay. I haven't been a lot of places, so I'm trying to think of, like, what my fantasy place would be.
It could also be, the reason that I said on the planet is that there could still be something fanciful. Like, it could still be like a treehouse like the Ewoks have, but in the Redwood Forest, or like under the sea.
Right. I would like to go to a Sherlock Holmes not tourist park, but like, you know, like Westworld, where like they had like the robots. So like a Sherlock Holmes, like Westworld.
Okay. All right. Great.
But the robots don't go crazy and kill you.
Fair.
You just get to solve mysteries.
Fair. Robot mysteries.
Robot
the
mysteries.
The very best kind. Wonderful. Okay. Austria, Sherlock Holmes world.
Mm-hmm. And, God, you know, I like working so much.
I hear you.
Like, it's fun to like create stuff. So it's weird to think of, and I don't get to go away too often. Someplace where we could lay around and this is Palm Springs.
Okay.
This is Palm Springs. Read a book.
Great. Okay. Next one. I feel like I need to ask you the time travel question. So
yes.
Three places, future or past, that you can go, you're in sort of a protective bubble. So if you want to see or experience something, it's not like at your own peril.
Right. And it won't be changing the timeline.
It won't be changing the timeline at all.
Or creating an alternate timeline.
It shan't.
Okay.
Unless you wanted to.
I would go to San Francisco during the time when Mark Twain was a reporter in San Francisco. And I'd like to meet him there because he was at a crossroads in his life and career where he was trying to figure out what to do. And he was muckraking and getting in trouble with the police, writing police brutality story. Like, he wrote they just found a bunch of these articles.
Oh, wow.
And some of them have been they have known them, but they're going to be published, I think, in a year or two. But like, he was writing about police brutality stuff that is like,
oh,
weirdly, like, it could have been written today.
Germaine,
yeah.
That's so cool.
But I just love Mark Twain, and when he was super famous, I feel like he might be disappointing as like a jerk or something.
That's great choice.
And before he's married, so we could have a drink and like party.
Well, good luck with your other two, because I don't know how you're going to top that.
Okay. I should have saved that one. I would go on a comedy tour. I would like see famous comedians at their prime, like see, who would I see? Like Chaplin on stage, like go see some
That's
vaudeville.
Great. That's great.
or see Buster Keaton on set working.
Yeah, great.
So something like that. And then I would go see... I go see my mom.
Great. Any particular era?
I go see her in the 80s.
Great.
When she was studying to be a paramedic.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. Oh, that's great. Okay. And then last category. Boy, this is tough, man. Very tough. Last category is three act... Well, I guess we kind of covered that with the comedy. Let's say three... Just three, any three great thinkers, three visual artists, three something that we kind of haven't touched on yet, but three people who it would be awesome if they you had sort of like a bat phone too, and they loved you, and you could just be like, "What do you think I should do about this?"
Oh, that's
it's okay if you throw Mark Twain in here and you want to cover him twice because I know you love him.
That's good. Not Bill Cosby, who used to be a hero, and that's all gone now.
Have you watched Mr. Robot?
No.
That's an interesting pilot. What is it about? It's about a guy who, it's about a young kind of computer hacker. I mean, it's the kind of thing that when I saw what it was on paper, I was like, I'm not interested in that really. And then I watched it and I was like, it's pretty good. There's a lot of good television out now. There's kind of a long diatribe about the disenchantment of Americans and kind of who like so many people that we thought were heroes, kind of crumbling at once. And they're sort of that sort of thing that they flash to Bill Cosby. So that's what made me think of it.
So we're talking like people who aren't around anymore, right?
Or people who are. What if you're like, future Matthew McConaughey, just like he feels.
10 years from now.
Post his Oscar.
Not Chaplin, because I don't really, because he was kind of an egomaniac, so not Chaplin.
He's a rascal, huh?
I'm going to say Buster Keaton. Mm-hmm. And Ray Bradbury.
Get in line. There's no line. It's just you and me. Yeah, that's for sure my number one.
And who would be cool?
I'm looking at your t-shirt because I have a feeling that Charles Schultz was awesome.
Yeah, I love Charles Schultz.
I'm not saying that he's somebody that I would call for advice necessarily, but I bet he was a fun person to hang out with.
I would want to say Walt Disney, but there's so much sort of negative stuff about Disney as well, because he used to be one of my heroes.
Roy Disney? Just kidding.
Any of the Disney clan, really.
Oh, I'll do respect Roy.
This is a hard one.
I know it's hard because sometimes people create such amazing work, but who they are as people.
Yeah. And there's also like Peter Falk.
Oh, of course. Great.
Peter Falk.
No brainer.
Why didn't that? Yeah, that should have been on the.
I know, but
top
that's how this
list.
Game works.
Yeah.
It's the.
I'll think of some more on the way home.
Yeah, exactly. You can write a script for our podcast episode since you could have expressed yourself better, and then we'll just record a scripted version of the podcast. That actually would make me laugh really hard. Okay, tell me when to stop.
Okay, stop.
Oh my! All right. I'm going to pause this. When I come back, I'm going to have your 100% guaranteed MASH future.
Fantastic.
Ready and waiting.
All right. Look forward to it.
Guys, we'll see you in right. I don't know. I mean, listen, that was the fastest. That was a quick draw. McGraw. Is that a thing?
Yes, okay, it is.
Great. Is it a cartoon?
Yeah.
Is it a dog?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Just wanted to be sure. It was a Yogi Bear.
Yeah, I'm getting it mixed up with McGruff the crime dog.
Oh, right.
But in my head.
So many McGees.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with the movie director. Anyway, that was very fast, but I feel it paid off in spades.
Oh, good.
I'm so excited about all of these. I don't even know where to start. Number one, this makes sense. Etta ended up with Benedict Cumberbatch as Sherlock Holmes, but I submit to you, maybe it's the robot version of Sherlock Holmes because that is where your vacation home is.
Yes.
So you managed to finagle a situation in which you don't really have to feel that intimidated by Sherlock Holmes' robot.
Okay.
Meanwhile, you're very busy with Ellen Ripley.
Ooh.
What? Amazing. Now she's very strong, very tough.
Right.
I don't know if she gets a little rough. I want you to rest assured, with the powers of the Wolverine, it doesn't even matter. Also, you can step in and fight aliens for sure as cool. Wolverine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All of these are like my favorite things. Everything you got is my favorite thing. This is great. You can enjoy the world of time and again.
Yes.
Oh, it's a mansion, by the way, in Sherlock Holmes' world. So you got the best of that.
Nice.
Unlimited Cancun burritos.
Perfect.
Which I think probably didn't exist yet in San Francisco era. Mark Twain.
Whoa.
But that is where you will be traveling.
That's so what that's how that will be how I can sort of yeah, 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 yeah. I'll break the ice with a burrito.
And some I know someone else who will be extremely excited and interested to hear all about your adventures with Mark Twain, which is Ray Bradbury.
Yes.
Aww. Like this might be the best mash I've ever done. I'm so happy about all
this. I concur. I'm happy with
just
my
to be
life,
adjacent to everything
life.
That just happened is like extremely exciting. I got emotional thinking about you and talking to Mark Twain in that era and talking to Ray Bradbury. Really brings a tear to my eye. I'm so glad you did the podcast. I was going to do this one thing, but I feel like we're running a little low on time. But you know what? I'm going to read this because I think this is you're a good person to talk to about this after everything we just talked about high school.
Okay.
I'm going to read that. I got a wonderful note. Every once in a while, I'll get something from someone asking for advice. And I know that forever ago, I said I was going to maybe do like a little advice section. And then I mentioned it in an intro recently. And I have held on to a couple of these. A lot of the time, I just write back. I just write an email back. And sometimes it takes me a lot of time to do that because I get a lot of notes. But I will do this one because it's a boy. It's a boy who wrote it, and it's a boy of summer. Kind of a fun problem, and I don't mean fun like I don't feel for you. But here it is. So I've got a bit of a thorny relationship problem. My crush of nearly 5 years and I dated briefly over four years ago before she broke up with me and broke my heart. We went through not talking to each other phase and spent 2 years slowly figuring out how to be friends, only to realize that our history lets us be incredibly honest with each other and we're each other's best friends now. Here's the problem, though. Even though we only dated briefly and it was years ago, she is/was what I consider my first true love. I thought I was mostly over her. We both understand that we mostly wouldn't work as a couple, but she recently moved back from 2 years in Japan for school, and I'm finding out I'm not as over her as I thought. She's still basically everything I find attractive in a girl, and our super trusting relationship is the sort of thing I want from a relationship. I haven't had a girlfriend or even really been on a date since we broke up, in part because of life, but also because I have a hard time finding a girl who is as interesting. I also tend to expect the same level of trust and familiarity that we have from budding relationships, or I don't find them as interesting. What do you think I should do? We have a fairly open communication, just a few topics we both agree we can't talk about because it stirs up old pains and memories. I keep wanting to try online dating, but it doesn't feel right to me.
Wow.
This is tough, man.
Yeah, that
this
is very
really tough.
I've been there, man.
I thought you would be a good person for this.
It's you know, without knowing you guys and the details of the situation, it's hard to really give advice because, you know, maybe it'll work out someday, maybe it won't. So it's really hard to say one way or the other, but you know, I would say get out there and just try to meet other people and just sort of, see where it leads you. Cause it may lead you back to her and she may come to you. You know, 5 years is a long time to carry a torch, and I would recommend just trying to get out there and meet some people.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's so hard because this is a story that I think so many of us can relate to, and some of us have been on one side, some of us have been on the other, some mm-hmm. have been on both. I've been on both,
absolutely.
And I just feel like. The hardest thing about that is that when you have a great friendship and you've evolved into that great friendship, it seems to me that generally, again, to Gabe's point, not knowing you guys personally, but it seems like generally the other person, when presented with like, what if we alter this relationship again, very often is like, no, I don't want to risk what we have. And I think I think what ends up kind of happening sometimes when that, when that's presented is that it's hard to go back to the way it was, it's hard to just be like, oh, okay, well then I guess I'm okay right. with that, because that person will feel terrible for not giving you the answer you want. And that can create distance. And then you might end up losing her.
Yeah.
You might not. But you might. But if it's a situation where it's too painful to be around her because you want it so much that that's all you're thinking about, then maybe you do need to say something, because you might need to break away either way.
Right.
It's really hard.
And it goes back to my point of being, you know, when I was in high school and being not knowing how to sort of be around girls. And, you know, I sort of jokingly said I didn't realize they were human beings. And you could just talk like just... go out and make friends, take a class where you will meet new people, and just put yourself in different situations where you can meet new people and make friends. And a date doesn't have to be the most romantic thing in the world. You can go and you know, go get coffee. You can, you know, make more friends who are female, and maybe something there will be sparked.
Or
and,
you'll meet a friend of her, that yeah, friend.
Exactly.
If you're not attracted. Yeah. That's like, I'd say take a page from Mark Evan Jackson's episode too, in that way. Cause he was talking about, he's like, we don't have to put so much pressure on each yeah. single date. It can be much more kind of loose and light and freeing than that. And you know, the upside of it is, and I know this is maybe not exactly what any of us want to hear when we're kind of in that moment wanting to believe that we'll end up with this person, which you could, you definitely could.
Right.
But if you don't, I definitely have friends that I feel like if we had dated, we wouldn't still be friends. And I'm so glad that we're still friends instead.
Sure.
Do you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, like we could have almost dated in college. Yeah. Like we could have definitely gone down the road. And I remember being like, fuck, I don't want to, what if, you know what I mean? And,
yeah.
And if we wouldn't have lasted, then we wouldn't be friends today. And yeah. I would never trade the chance. Like I would never trade the chance. And I think that's, again, not the most fun thing to hear, but like 10 years from now, you may have fallen wildly in love with your soulmate
right.
and talk to, you know, and think and look at your friend and think like, thank God I still have her, you know? Thank you for answering that, Gabe. I thought it was
absolutely.
Very helpful. And then the last order of business, which I guess you know if you listen to the Colin Hanks episode, if nothing else, is that I do require some singing of Boys of Summer mm-hmm. by Don Henley. I printed out the lyrics because someone's finally suggested I do so. And
it's another one of those songs that I you listen to.
I was
going to
say, as it happens, it turned out great because you would maybe know the song without knowing the lyrics. Do you remember the tune?
Out on the road today, I saw a deadhead sticker on a Cadillac. A little voice inside my head said, don't look back, you can never look back. I thought I knew what love was, what did I know? These days are gone forever, I should just let them go, but I can see you. Your brown skin shining in the sun. You got the top pulled down and that radio on, baby. And I can tell you my love for you will still be strong after the boys of summer have gone.
Oh, no. Immediate new favorite. Oh, God. Okay. Thank you so much for doing that.
My pleasure.
What is the situation with Gabriel, Diani, and Ed Devine? What is the situation with Diani and Devine meet the apocalypse?
We're in post-production on this movie
okay.
called that thing that you just said, Diani and uh-huh. Devine meet the apocalypse. Janet Varney is in it, along with Barry Bostwick and Kristen Bangsness. And who else is in it?
Jonathan Silverman.
Jonathan Silverman and Amir Talai, who was just on this
yeah.
podcast. And lots of other people who, because it's we have about 41 speaking parts in it. Anyways, it's a comedy about two comedians who go on the road after the apocalypse to try to find a safe place to be. And it's in the spirit of the old Abbott and Costello comedy team movies. Yeah, we're in post-production, doing color correction, VFX, sound, all that stuff. And you can pre-order it at www.ddmta.com.
Nice.
And that leads you to our website where you can take a look at all of our stuff if you're interested.
Guys, great. Great, great, great. I'm really excited to see it. They've worked so hard on it. So please give that some support. And you can also follow...
at Gabe Diani.
At Gabe Diani on Twitter.
Or at DD_apocalypse if you're interested
DD
in the movie.
DD_apocalypse. Please do so. And thanks.
Thank you, for having me.
I'm so excited we did it.
Me too.
Guys, we'll talk to you next time on the podcast.
Not me. I won't be here.
That's true. Oh, we were better.
As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.